council come to order. Before we take the roll, I want to recognize we have the OMF as part of the Office of Management and Finance, John Shadowday. We have 7 graduate students from Portland State University, Hatfield School of Government's Oregon Fellow Summer Program joining us today. These students are from all around the country and come to Oregon to participate in the program and complete a 10-week internship with public agencies throughout the Portland area. This year, students are focusing their studies on the areas of public policy, public administration, conflict and dispute resolution, global and regional planning, social work, sustainable international development, and global leadership. Today, professionals from the fields of financial analysis, management analysis, program management, and project management have volunteered to serve as mentors to these students as part of OMF's Job Shadow Day. Each student will have an opportunity to spend time with at least 2 professionals, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and as part of the day's program, they are here with us to observe part of the morning's council session. Could you please stand up? Please stand up. Welcome. Glad you're here. All right. I'd like to recognize Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Later today, staff from Portland Parks and Recreation will honor 2 members of our extended parks family, Dick and Jareed Toll. Park staff will be presenting Dick and Jareed with a plaque to honor their longstanding dedication and effort in the restoration of the Columbia Children's Arboretum in the East Columbia neighborhood. Dick and Jareed have supported our parks efforts for well over 20 years and have been instrumental in the restoration and rebuilding of the Children's Arboretum. 4 years ago, they spearheaded fundraising efforts that raised over $160,000 for major renovations in the Arboretum. Their efforts helped bring distinction to the Friends of the Children's Arboretum when they were selected for the Bill Nato Community Trees Award in 2008. Dick and Jareed have also worked tirelessly for the protection of other natural habitat areas in the East Columbia neighborhood. The plaque honoring their commitment to the community will be mounted on a boulder and placed in the Columbia Children's Arboretum. I'm sorry to report that Dick's health has declined in the last year, and he is unable to be here today so we can thank him in person. But we're hoping that members of his family may be watching this, so will you please join me in thanking them for their outstanding service to our community.
Commissioner Fish, I visited with Dick and Jareed last night. I was at an event in East Columbia neighborhood, and they're in very good spirits. They didn't know about this. I think this is a complete surprise. But Dick and Jareed have been a major force in our community on multiple issues. And I asked Dick, looking back, what are some of the things that he's most happy about? And he talked about the Arboretum, but he said it's because people come there and people join together to work on the projects there. So he understands that the place and creating the place is part of it, but it's the bringing people together that really makes the difference and that he is most happy with. So thank you, Commissioner Fish, for doing this honor for him.
Thank you. All right. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Adams.
Here. The quorum is present, and before we start with communications, I'd like to ask that you join me in a moment of silence for the victims of the Aurora theater shooting, and also the local victims of gun violence. Thank you. Can you please read the title for item number 839?
Request of James B. Lee to address council to urge city's withdrawal from intergovernmental agreement to fund replacement of Selwood Bridge.
Hi, Mr. Lee. How are you?
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is James Lee. I reside on Southeast Mitchell Street in Portland, and I speak only for myself. Thank you for hearing me today. I was at the meeting in the county building on the Selwood Bridge last week, and I followed the mayor's remarks concerning the financing of it, and I agree with those remarks, but I would like to say that perhaps they were slightly misdirected in the towards Mr. Ian Cannon, who is nominally the engineer on that bridge. The real power on that bridge, and as you probably understand, is Mike Pullen. My experience is that everything, whether it's finances or engineering or politics, goes through Mike Pullen. And it's also been evident for a fair number of years that the bridge is seriously, very seriously, more expensive than it needs to be. For example, there was originally a bid by Bechtel Company, I believe, to replace the entire bridge for $95 million. I attended a meeting of the Oregon Transportation Commission several years ago in which the then-chairman, Gail Ackerman, who has since deceased, unfortunately, said that in her opinion, any expense more than $80 million to replace the Selwood Bridge generated no additional benefit to the state of Oregon. And also, if we look at TriMet's new bridge for $135 million, it is about the same span and the same width as a replacement for the Selwood Bridge, but it must carry twice the load. However, it costs only half as much. So I think, Mr. Mayor and Council, that if it were possible to reconsider the intergovernmental agreement for the $86 million or so dollars that the city has committed to this, that you might be able to pull back to a much more reasonable design of that bridge. For example, I cannot understand why it's necessary to have four bicycle lanes. I'm a cyclist, but there are multi-use paths, just as there are on the Hawthorne Bridge and as there will be on TriMet's new bridge. But in addition to these, we have additional green-painted lanes for the for cycling on the bridge. I remind you that this bridge is basically brought to you by the same people who have brought to you the Columbia River Crossing, that is the Oregon Department of Transportation. And it is basically that that project on a smaller scale, and it has the same sort of influences which have determined its design. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. We'll now consider the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
We had one item, 855. To be referred to back to the mayor's office.
Can you please read the title?
855, authorize a competitive solicitation for a streetcar maintenance truck.
Referred back to the mayor's office. Hearing no others, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the time certain? To confirm findings, item number 840.
Tentatively deny appeal of Northwest District Association and uphold the Historic Landmarks Commission's decision to approve the application of Johnson Street Investors II LLC and Mill Creek Residential Trust LLC for historic design review for two new five-story apartment buildings as a single project at the intersection of Northwest 19th Avenue and Northwest Johnson Street.
All right, so Ms. Reese, can't see you, but...
But I'm here.
Okay, what would you like us to do today?
We need a motion from someone on the council to tentatively, to deny the appeal, uphold the Historic Landmarks Commission decision, as it's stated in the title, and to adopt the findings that have been given to you prior to this hearing.
I'm moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any council discussion? Sue, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Saltzman.
No.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
My colleagues indicated last week that the agreement between the neighborhood and the developer isn't something that can be made a condition of approval. I agree there's a possible conflict with the condition that would have the overall that there would be a conflict with the approval criteria and it would set precedent without changing the code. I agree that there needs to be a code update The Historic Design Commission was told they don't have the authority to review the trees as part of this development. Bringing this agreement as a condition of approval would extend beyond that authority. I believe there is merit in what the neighborhood has stated regarding the approval criteria that should have been addressed by staff in 33-445-230, but I believe that the landscape features and the street trees are exempted from review except as reviewed by the city arborist. But it's true that trees often define a neighborhood and a site. Taking numerous trees out of the Urbington neighborhood, for example, and you would see how it would alter the historic aspect of that neighborhood. The same goes for any older neighborhood in our city. So we do need to look at this relationship and incorporate street trees and on-site trees review as part of the historic review. And I believe this should be put into the package of issues to be addressed in the Portland Plan Comprehensive Plan update and in future historic design review updates. Therefore, I have to support their appeal, even though I believe that the neighborhood's opinions have a lot of merit. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Just to be clear, this is not my legislative intent, and my vote is not intended to be precedential. Aye. All right, 840 is approved. Can you please read the title to item number 841?
841, revised transportation fees, rates, and charges for fiscal year 2012 through 2013.
This is referred back to the mayor's office. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 842?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement for student transit pass program between TriMet, Portland Public Schools, and the City of Portland.
If Catherine, Carol, and Tom would please come forward. Portland Public Schools is the only school district in Oregon that does not provide state-funded yellow bus transportation for high school students. It's our understanding from the state that it has never provided yellow bus transportation services for high school students. Instead, Portland Public School high school students use the TriMet system to get to school and other activities. In an effort to lower barriers to student attendance, extracurricular activities, and employment, the Youth Pass program was piloted in 08-09 school year and expanded to all 13,000 Portland Public School high schools students. I think that number is wrong. To all Portland Public School high schools in 2010. The program was initially funded by the State Business Energy Tax Credit, which is no longer available for this purpose. Since late last year, we've been working with TriMet and the Portland Public Schools to come up with a way to continue the Youth Pass program. We are pleased to be here today to request your approval of the funding agreement created by the parties. For 2012-13 school year, Portland Public Schools will contribute $950,000 of the $2.9 million program costs. The City of Portland will contribute $200,000 from the unused contingency of the Moody Avenue project. And TriMet will contribute the remaining balance of $1.8 million in foregone fare revenue. After this year, the parties have agreed that the funding for Youth Pass will be split in future years. Looking forward, we agreed to go to the state legislature to seek additional funding. Proposed non-roadway funding concept to complement the OTIA funding and gas tax increase, and will work with the State Department of Education to secure additional student transportation dollars. So with that, I'm happy to welcome our panel today, and I'll begin by recognizing the Mayor's Director of Transportation, Catherine Charlotte.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thank you very much. And Mayor Adams walked through the outlines of the deal that the TriMet leadership, the school district, and our office have worked on over the last 6 months. I think you all are aware of some of the context surrounding that. I'm happy to answer any questions about that. As the mayor mentioned, the City of Portland will be contributing $200,000 this year for the 12-13 school year. And then starting in 13-14, the program will be split one-third, one-third, one-third amongst the three parties. We have agreed to establish a working group early in 2013 to really look hard at that question of state funding. There's some interesting ideas in transportation funding, as the mayor mentioned, the non-roadway proposal that could replace the Betsy C- credit funding. And we will also work with the State Department of Education to just ensure that the Portland region is treated equitably in terms of school transportation funding. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I also would like to thank the folks who've been working so closely with us on the issue.
Superintendent, welcome back.
Thank you, and I'm here just to say thank you so much, Mayor Adams and commissioners, for working so hard with Portland Public Schools and TriMet to extend this program. It's been a hugely important program for students accessing both getting to school, but also to work experience, to mentorships, internships, extracurricular activities, and it's the kind of access that supports students graduating from school and becoming contributing citizens in this city. It's also been, I think, an important thing for fostering lifelong users of public transportation and us using, not recreating infrastructure for every public entity, like using a single infrastructure as three public agencies and figuring out creatively how we fund and maximize our use of our existing transit system feels like an important example of collaboration amongst public agencies. So I'm just really pleased to have found a solution and to have a commitment going forward to make this be an ongoing commitment to our young people in the city. So thank you for all being part of making that happen.
Mr. Strader, welcome.
Good morning. I'm Tom Strader, Program Manager from TriMet. Pleased to be here this morning, and wanted to also say that TriMet is pleased to be able to continue providing the Student Pass program into this fall and beyond. So thank you very much for all your hard work.
Any questions from Council?
One question. I'm really happy that we're here today to execute this agreement. I think as the superintendent said, you know, the youth pass really is, and it's a voyage of knowledge, and it's a voyage of opportunity for high school students in Portland. When I was Parks Commissioner, I was really amazed how many children living in East Portland have never been to Forest Park, never been to Washington Park, and you know, TriMet buses being free increases those access to opportunities and access to employment opportunities. So this is a great thing, and I really want to make sure that when we pass this today that we're also directing our Office of Management and Finance to incorporate the additional $996,000 that we'll need for next year into our financial forecast so that we can make this an ongoing commitment and not have to make it a debate every year. So I'm really happy, but I guess I did want to ask Catherine about the state approach and what exactly is non-roadway funding.
Thanks for the question. In the past couple of legislative sessions, there have been a couple of bills that have passed, one of which was the gas tax increase. And then in the past 5 years, there have been a couple of OTIA, which are bond programs for the State Department of Transportation. In both cases, that funding has been constitutionally dedicated to the roadway, the right-of-way, and has tended to favor some of the larger motor vehicle projects. So the governor's office and some other folks in Salem are looking at what they're calling at this time non-roadway transportation, which I think is a way to try to get around calling it alternative. But the idea is looking for sources, maybe non-traditional sources, possibly lottery dollars, possibly other sources, to fund some of the things that can't be funded out of our constitutionally restricted gas tax dollars, and also possibly to replace some of the projects that were funded by the Betsy credit. That had a big impact. The changes to the Betsy credit had a big impact for the city and a number of other transit agencies around the state. Because those credits had been used in a number of different ways to advance non-roadway transportation. And, of course, the youth pass was one of the ways. So the idea is to try to get some replacement funding there.
And this would be through the legislature?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Great. Thank you.
So my question, the next year's appropriation, will we be doing that as part of the budget process in the fall to add a budget note to make sure that we get the funding, as Commissioner Saltzman just mentioned, for next year's budget?
It would, my advice is it'll be submitted as a request by the Bureau of Transportation, because those requests get started while I'm still mayor, and then it'll be up to the City Council to consider after that.
Thank you.
All right, thank you all very much. Has anyone signed up?
We had one individual sign up.
Okay, again, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Strader.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Thank you, Catherine.
And Thomas Mullen, will you come up?
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me represent myself. I'm a resident of Salem, Oregon now. I have been a long-time resident of Portland, Oregon for some 47 years. And back in 1968, I was trying to put together an undivided house. I dropped you off some information earlier this week, and I hope you had time to review it. As a TriMet putting in their system, as they traded a freeway for a TriMet system, they overran me with power and money and stuff, and closed that gateway where we couldn't put the undivided house together that was gave it to me by the school district. And the school district turned around and took it back and sold it to O.B. Williams. But anyway, TriMet was one of the major people that squirreled it out. So if TriMet hadn't overran me, we wouldn't have to ask TriMet to give so much money, because we'd have been able to afford our own bus fares and stuff like that, and had jobs and stuff for the community. And I'm asking at this time to have a review on that thing, on that situation, for TriMet to reimburse me, because it says if someone does misuse their powers and stuff, that we're supposed to be compensated for. And I've been trying to get an attorney to look at it and stuff, and they're charging starting at $100 an hour up to $200-some dollars an hour. And I'm disabled as of 1/14/1994 due to a auto accident while I was incarcerated here in Multnomah County. And so, and I haven't got nowhere with that. So therefore, you know, and they got me doing my own Social Security, which is a fraud to me, because they injured me, but they refused to pay me, saying they owe me, but they just not going to pay me. So, and every time I try to help the community, I end up getting squirreled out by some bigger organization. And so I need somebody help and stuff. So once you did acknowledge the TriMet did do wrong by withdrawing their money, that's why I'm trying to point out they have been being wrong for the longest time. So I need some help from the community and from the state of Oregon to justify the wrong that they have done in the past and bring it to the light.
Thank you, Mr. Mullins. Appreciate it. Sue, would you please call the vote?
Saul Smith.
Well, I want to thank the mayor for his leadership, and this really is a win for TriMet. It's a win for the school district, and it's a win for our city's high school youth. As I said a minute ago, it's really, these youth passes are accesses to opportunity, discovery, and knowledge, and that's so important. And so many youth in our city need these passes to get to school, and it's not something that you know, the days of parents taking kids to schools, for the most part, are long gone. And kids need to get to school on their own. They need to be able to stay after school for sun programs and things like that, and be able to get home afterwards. And without these TriMet youth passes, many kids can't do this. And I've been told that before directly by many youth. So I'm really pleased to support this today, and it is my intent that this become part of our financial forecast and become an ongoing general fund supported appropriation. Aye.
Leonard.
Well, in my view, effective politicians use different tools to achieve goals. When you have a toolbox that you reach into, you have to be discriminating which tool you pull out. And the most effective politicians, more times than not, will use those tools that require persuasion and oftentimes discussions that occur behind the scenes that nobody ever knows about, but achieves one's end. At other times, that doesn't work, and you have to use other tools. I admire the art is knowing which tool to use and when. I admire that Sam has, in this instance and others, displayed his knowledge of the art of politics, of when It is appropriate to use one set of tools, and if that's not working, to use another and to know when the right time is to do that. He's drawn a line in the sand for the Portland Public School students, and I think he had tried a variety of other strategies to achieve that goal that didn't work, and thus I think he was pushed into a corner to do what he did, but he did on behalf of Portlanders and Portland kids. And I appreciate that and am pleased to support this. Aye.
Fritz.
After 17 years in Portland Public Schools as a parent, I became a very strong supporter of this program back when it was the Sisters in Action for Power coming out of Jefferson High School pleading for just half price bus passes. That pilot project was very successful. The Multnomah Youth Commission then advocated for a system-wide pass, and that program has been very successful. And I have been a staunch supporter, and I thank Mayor Adams for insisting on this. It's important for our whole community. It's important for our sustainability goals. The TriMet system goes so many more places than the Yellow Bus system, and in a city the size of Portland, as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, we need our students to have the flexibility to be able to stay after school for study hall or for extracurricular activities, and to be able to get to other places that are educational, like our historical society that Multnomah County residents can now visit for free whenever they want. So I want to particularly thank the students at Multnomah Learning Center, Metropolitan Learning Center, and the Marshall students who are now traveling further to Madison and Franklin. Both of those student bodies sent in lots of lobbying over the course of the past couple of years, and that was noted and appreciated. Like Commissioner Saltzman, I will continue to be committed to this program. It is important for our whole community. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I'm glad Carol's here today, sort of representing all the school districts in Portland. I just made a list of the last 6 months, the things that this Pro Kids, Pro Schools Council has been able to do under Mayor Adams' leadership. And I know this is not intended to be an exhaustive list, but we protected Sun Schools. We were able to help the district save teaching positions. We've developed new partnerships in places like Lentz and elsewhere where we can address other community needs. We're working to build quality all-weather fields in high schools across the city and gardens. And the mayor's education initiatives include mentoring programs and cradle-to-career programs, which make sure children can go from public school to higher education. I understand there's a bond measure planned in one of our districts this fall, and today another important piece is the student transit pass. You know, in my 4 years, I don't remember a period of time in which the council has been more focused on supporting young people in our community. And we talk about young people being our most precious resource, but as a community and as a country, we don't always demonstrate that. And I think this is yet another down payment on the future of people we're counting on in our community to lead and someday occupy these seats. So, Sam, thank you for your exemplary work on this whole cluster of issues. I'm very proud today to cast my vote aye.
Adams.
Well, I appreciate the kind words from my colleagues on the City Council, but rest assured, this is an education City Council like no other. And I've been around a long time. While the problem of education funding, while the work to ever improve academic achievements, that work is not done and perhaps will never be entirely completed, this City Council, working with our partners like Superintendent Smith and superintendents across the county, and partners like TriMet and other Multnomah County, we continue to innovate and make improvements where we can. And it has taken sacrifice. But it is an investment that is paying off in improved high school graduation rates and improved academic performance. And I'm pleased to work with this City Council to move this piece forward. In doing so, I want to thank TriMet and the TriMet Board of Directors, who have a very difficult job of keeping the regional transit agency moving at a time that they, too, are having to face deep cuts and changes in the demand for service. So my thanks to them. Finally, I want to thank Catherine Charlo, the transportation director in the office of mayor, who's just fantastic on all kinds of issues, and also the Bureau of Transportation, Director Tom Miller, and also Greg Jones, who's been key in helping us figure this out. I'm very pleased to vote aye. So approved. Thank you. Can you please read the title for regular agenda item number 863?
Review the city franchise system for collecting solid waste, recycling, and composting.
As part of the existing 2008 franchise agreement, the City Council has the authority to initiate the periodic review process of the residential solid waste and recycling franchises. This resolution will initiate that regular review process conducted by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and they will report back to us later this fall. During the process, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability will check in with each of your offices to discuss the review and make sure that we're covering the issues that you want us to cover. Michael Armstrong, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability Manager, is here to briefly cover the proposed review and answer your questions. Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, I'm Michael Armstrong with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. The solid waste and recycling collection system was first franchised in 1992, and we at that time put in place a 10-year franchise agreement that has this midpoint opportunity to review and look again. And so we've now done this review several times at the 5-year mark, which is where we are. We're approaching that today, which led us to bring this resolution to you. This resolution would direct the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to begin the review of the residential franchise system. And we've had a lot of changes on the program side in terms of collection of food scraps, for example. This is intended to look at the overall regulatory framework for it. And so by way of illustration, we currently have 18 private companies that collect solid waste from households in Portland. In Seattle, they have a contract and do a request for proposals, and they contract with two firms. In San Francisco, they contract with just a single firm. So just to give a sense of, you know, there are a number of different ways to run your solid waste system. We've chosen a franchise path, and we want to look at it periodically and just test whether it's still meeting the needs, the priorities, the goals that council sets, the rates that are in the interest of citizens. The review that we would undertake is proposed to be guided by principles, which you have as Exhibit A attached to the resolution. These essentially are to achieve the recycling rate and waste reduction goals that City Council sets, to ensure cost-effective rates for residents and safe operations for haulers, provide exemplary customer service to our residents, implement best practices in collecting the waste, and this is maybe one of the more interesting ones, to maintain a flexible system so it can accommodate to changes over time as goals change, as opportunities change. The review will also look at the performance of the waste and recycling system in terms of the hauler's performance with customer service responsiveness, as well as some of the metrics we track around overall recycling rates, waste levels. As the mayor mentioned, the review will include a broad public process, so public meetings, opportunities for people to submit comments in a variety of forms. We intend to meet with each of you, get your input on how things are working, whether there are ways to improve it. We'll meet with the Public Utility Review Board. We'll meet with the haulers as well, and then come back in the fall with some findings and perhaps some recommendations based on what we've heard. I'm happy to answer questions if you have them at this time. We're at the start of this process, so this is really the first piece, and we certainly will be making the rounds as well as meeting with the public.
Questions? So we do this every 5 years or 10 years?
So the franchise agreement is for 10 years. It includes a clause that allows the haulers or the city to take a review, to relook at it at the 5-year mark. And so that's where we are today, coming up on the 5-year mark.
Okay. You know, one issue that's not, it's somewhat tangential to what you're doing, but I'd be interested in knowing from you or PBOT the answer to this question is, what are the current rules concerning where these trucks can stop when they're collecting garbage? And are they allowed, for example, to double park in a single lane arterial and block traffic? Are they required to give way and get off the lane? In my neighborhood, on a lot of the north, south, and east, west arterials, when someone is either picking up the recycling or the garbage, they generally just stop in the middle of the street and block buses and traffic. And I don't offhand know what the law is on that. I'd be interested in knowing.
I would be happy to look into that. We'll get back to you.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have anybody signed up to testify?
We do. Dave White.
Okay. Welcome. If you could just give us your name. And well, since you are a lobbyist, you should declare also who you represent.
Okay. Good morning, council members. My name is Dave White. I am regional representative for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. And in that position, I represent the Tri-County Council, which is the local industry association that represents the city's franchised residential collection companies. I have brief comments on behalf of the Tri-County Council regarding the franchise review resolution before you today. As you know, Portland haulers have decade-long tradition of commitment to providing an excellent collection service to the residents of the city. They are proud that their customers have historically rated the solid waste recycling, and yard debris collection service among the best services and best programs in the city. When the City Council decided to implement a new residential collection program, the Portland haulers assisted city staff with the pilot study and then worked hard to implement the program as efficiently and conveniently for our customers as possible. They're still working with staff and customers to assure the success of the new program. By approving the resolution before you today, the city begins the periodic review of the franchise system and evaluates its effectiveness in meeting city goals. We believe that this partnership between the city and its franchised haulers is a cost-effective and efficient system for providing solid waste recycling and composting collection service. We look forward to working with city staff, PERB, and the City Council on the review process, and we ask for your support of this resolution. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to testify on this resolution? Okay, Sue, if you could please call the roll.
Salzman.
I'm pleased to support this review, and I just also want to thank our residential haulers. I mean, they really are the face of the city in our solid waste and recycling program, and my experience, and I think as Dave White just said, citizens seem very satisfied with our system, and it's because the haulers, I believe, do such a great job of performance. And so I look forward to this review, and please to support it. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Just to clarify, this is to look at the franchise system. We are going to be having a hearing later in the year after October 31st to look at whether to continue the, or to take comment on the new garbage and recycling servicing system. I'm hearing a lot of comments about that. There's a lot of interest in the community. This is a slightly different, it's a different process, and we would be looking for input from customers on how the franchise system is working. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Well, I'm always dedicated to continuous improvement, and this makes sure that we put a real review behind that, and so please vote aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for item number 864 and call the vote?
Vacate a portion of Northwest Vaughn Street, west of Northwest 33rd Avenue, subject to conditions and reservations. Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Approved. Can you please read the title for item number 865?
865. Add Oregon 529 College Savings Plan to the list of organizations eligible to use the city employee payroll deduction system.
Good morning. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Council members. I'm here to speak with you this morning about adding the Oregon 529 College Savings Plan to the list of organizations that are eligible to use the city employee payroll deduction system. And I'll start with a background on 529 plans. 529 plans are state-sponsored, tax-advantaged investment vehicles that are designed to encourage savings for future higher education expenses for designated beneficiaries. Anyone can be a designated beneficiary, even yourself. There are no age limits, and there are no limits as to where you live. Beneficiaries can attend and use the funds for any eligible education institution in the United States and abroad, including vocational schools, technical schools, two-year and four-year colleges, and graduate schools. Qualified higher education expenses include tuition, fees, books, supplies, equipment, computer equipment, and room and board if you attend the school at least half-time. In the state of Oregon, the 529 College Savings Network was established by the state and is administered through the state treasurer's office. Oregon today offers two plans. One is offered only through financial advisors, and that's not what we're talking about today. One is managed today by TIAA CREF and can be purchased directly without a financial advisor. That's what we're talking about. In 2012, anyone who pays Oregon state taxes and contributes to the Oregon 529 plan can take a state tax deduction for contributions. If you're filing jointly, you can deduct up to $4,345. If you're filing other than joint, your deduction can go up to $2,170. If you contribute more than those amounts, the excess contribution can be rolled forward for up to 4 years. If the funds are used for the qualified higher education expenses, the investment earnings and the withdrawals are both tax-free for Oregon State and your federal taxes. The minimum investment is $25. There is no limit on the number of accounts that a beneficiary can have in his or her name. Total balances of all accounts for a single beneficiary, though, cannot exceed $310,000. If a beneficiary of a fund decides not to use that fund, there are no tax consequences to changing the beneficiary to another member of the same family, or they can just let the account sit and continue to grow tax-free in case they change their minds at a future date, or they can take a non-qualified withdrawal and the earnings get taxed at the account owner's ordinary rate and they pay a federal tax of 10%. So that's the background to the plan and the Oregon plan. What we're talking about here today is putting in place a convenience for employees through payroll. And we're aiming with your approval to roll this program out this fall with a communication plan working in hand with TIAA CREF. So
Mayor,
I'd be happy to answer
please.
Any questions.
I am delighted that you're proposing to add this to our list of options. I've been a participant in the 529 plan during mm-hmm. the good times, the bad times, and now the good times.
Mm-hmm.
And delighted that it's been moved to TIA CREF and mm-hmm. has been stabilized and that the state treasurer's office is reducing the fees
that
are charged. The one thing I would recommend, Jennifer, is in any communication we do with city employees
mm-hmm.
that we address this open question that I still haven't seen answered definitively anywhere, which is the impact of a 529 account on eligibility for financial aid. For those of us with children in college who are trying to maximize our options there's been some gray in the law about the impact of 529s and how and whether it's attributed to the named beneficiary or to the party that sets it up and how it impacts your overall rating for financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
I just suggest that we flag that for people and urge them to get independent advice on that because it's a wonderful program, but in some instances it can actually hurt people who are seeking financial assistance.
I will add that to the list. Thank you very much.
So are we adding this to the list of charitable payroll deduction? Okay.
There are two sections of the code. There's a section of the code that discusses charitable contributions. This is to City Code 5.08.14, which is specific only to salary deductions.
Okay, thanks.
Other council discussion? Would anyone like to testify on this non-emergency ordinance? All right, moves to further consideration by the City Council next week. Can you please read the title for item number 866?
Authorized acquisition of a vehicle for use by Portland Police Bureau.
Could I have folks come up from the Police Bureau? And from the Fleet Department. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Mayor and Council. My name is John Hunt. I'm the City Fleet Manager. And as required by Council Resolution 35960, anytime we add a vehicle to the fleet, we're required to bring it before you for approval. And that's just what we're doing today. Police Bureau was offered a vehicle at no cost through the Judicial Forfeiture Program. And so we're just requesting approval to add it to the fleet.
Great. And this vehicle would include equipment that we've used on other vehicles. And so would you describe some of the outfitting of the vehicle?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about technology with you again. The Bureau is proposing to add this vehicle to our fleet and install the automated license plate reader equipment that we have on three of our patrol cars now. This would be a fourth vehicle equipped with this technology. And this will allow detectives and officers out in uniform patrol areas to look for stolen cars and abandoned vehicles without being detected by auto thieves. And we would also use it in burglary investigations. The primary purpose of the ALPR system is to reduce auto theft. And it uses a series of high-resolution cameras on the vehicles to take a snapshot of license plates on vehicles on the street as our patrol vehicle passes by. Within a few seconds, that snapshot then goes through a national data system that has stolen vehicles entered into it. And when one of those vehicles is encountered by the ALPR vehicle, it sends an alert to our police officer, and allowing us to recover the vehicle for the victim, and in some cases hold people accountable if we see someone inside the vehicle or able to ascertain who took the vehicle. It's technology that's used by other major metropolitan police departments around the country and on the West Coast, including Seattle, San Francisco, Oakland, L.A., Las Vegas, Phoenix, Denver, and many Oregon police agencies as well. 2011 was the first year of full implementation for our current system, and I'll let Lieutenant Scruggs is going to talk to you about the policy that we crafted when we brought this technology forward, as well as the number of vehicles that we've recovered, the value of those vehicles to people, and the fact that we've had several cases, including homicides, we've been able to solve because of this technology. And I want to compliment Lieutenant Scruggs. He was an East Precinct sergeant and saw the value of this technology, brought it forward to the Bureau, has since been promoted to lieutenant, and continues to work on a number of innovative ideas. But this is one area where we've really been able to, I think, provide a great service to people in this community. Lieutenant Scruggs.
Hi, Mayor and Council. I'm Lieutenant John Scruggs, Portland Police Bureau. And first, I'll talk briefly about the policy. I think that's one of the things that most people wanted to hear about. Before we started this process, we actually contacted other agencies throughout the United States and asked them what their policy was, asked for copies of it. And then we also consulted with the International Association of Chiefs Police policy guidance dated 2007. I crafted our policy, which is actually more restrictive than many of the others that I saw. One of the things is that in our policy, when you log in, I know who's logged in. I can actually see how long you're logged in, what you're looking at. So can our ITT manager. Everybody who has access to the system itself has to go through 2 hours of training, includes a review of our policy and usage of the ALPR.
What acronym stands for?
Automatic License Plate Reader. Sorry.
Chief, I have a question for you. I did a ride-along a number of years ago in East Portland, and the officer was stopping periodically just to check license plates on cars. And it was pretty random. And I might have gotten some motion sickness as a result of that, because it was lots of stopping and starting. And it seemed fairly inefficient because the driver had to sort of multitask, look up, drive, look at the enter the information. Is one of the benefits of this system that it frees up the driver, operator of the car to focus on driving and not on doing the hot sheet scan?
Yeah. Absolutely. Again, this is an automated system, so it only alerts to vehicles that we've put in the system. which currently is stolen vehicles and then vehicles that are used in crime. So as an officer is driving to a call or driving down the street, the system itself will alert when it passes by a stolen vehicle, and then that information about the stolen vehicle comes up. You know, you saw probably on your ride along, the officer was, many officers have a hot sheet, they'll print that. So this kind of takes that information, automates it, so the officer doesn't have to scan a hot sheet that they would tape to their dash, or constantly entering. You'll, as a patrol officer, you get very familiar with the types of cars that are frequently stolen. And so as you're passing by one of those vehicles, you'll type that into your data system to see if it's a stolen vehicle. So this automates all of that.
Commissioner Fritz?
Mayor, I have a friendly amendment, which I'm passing out, which I discussed with Assistant Chief O'Day regarding reporting on this, the use of this system, and that is that we would add under now, therefore, a Section B, the Police Bureau will provide annual reports to council offices on the results and outcomes of the use of this camera system. Chief O'Day tells me that this is relatively not very time-consuming to do this because you already keep those records, and I was certainly very interested to hear the effectiveness of this camera in finding and recovering stolen vehicles. I think it's another example of how once we talk more about with our citizens and provide those reports that we encourage trust in our trustworthy police officers.
Second. So I support this amendment, and I want to just, why wouldn't I didn't support the surveillance camera. A similar amendment is the surveillance camera is obviously our cameras can be fixed in a permanent sense, or they can be fixed because we are looking at a hotspot or actually under active surveillance of a crime, and some crimes take weeks and months. So I did not support that because I felt, although well-intentioned, I felt it might have unintended consequences. I do support this because this is about movable technology, and it is easy for us, as you mentioned, Commissioner, to gather the information somewhat automated and provide that, and because it's moving technology, I don't think it has any it doesn't produce any of the concerns that I would have about more fixed surveillance. So I'm happy to
Can I ask a question about the proposed amendment? What does results and outcomes mean?
It's intended to be fairly general because I am my briefing indicated that in addition to locating stolen vehicles, it sometimes has been helpful in solving other crimes by identifying a vehicle that's been at a crime scene. So I think that's a good and appropriate use, and so I didn't want to limit it to stolen vehicles recovered, just a general report on the use and outcomes of the system.
But just to be clear, when you say outcomes, are you asking them to track the legal process on every trigger to some endpoint, or are you asking more generically what was the nature?
Generically,
yeah.
All right, and that says additional discussion.
I have some questions.
About the amendment?
Oh, no, about.
Okay, let's take the amendment. Sue, would you please call the vote on the amendment?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Amendment is approved. Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, I want to say, first of all, that I've done ride-alongs with then-Sergeant Scruggs and had similar experiences to what Commissioner Fish described. But when this first came up, I had some concerns about privacy, similar to the cameras in Old Town, and I had a good meeting with Assistant Chief Hendricks, I think, which allayed my concerns, but I want to just go over them now because, Chief, you said something that kind of raised a concern of mine. So these advanced license plate readers, we already have them, right?
Yes, we have three of them currently on patrol vehicles, one at each precinct.
And so we have pretty strict policies about access of this database by officers.
We do.
And abuse of that policy or violation of that policy is, I believe, similar to a violation of the LEDS, law enforcement data system policy?
It would be a performance issue, and we would hold people accountable.
And so, and the information we gather is not shared with other state, federal, I guess I want to throw in insurance industry.
We do not share it with an insurance industry. It is a law enforcement database, and we treat it as such. We have used this by a detective assigned to the U.S. Marshals Task Force to locate a homicide suspect. And so it was used in that way.
But so there's no routine sharing of information.
It doesn't go in their database. No. They called me and asked me to look for the plate.
Okay. So but a specific investigation.
Correct.
But I do want to make sure that we're answering your question. I mean, by identifying a stolen vehicle and recovering it, we do inform the national database that that vehicle has been.
Yes, comes out of the database. But we don't share this information, whatever we're capturing in our system. We don't share that with anyone else.
Yeah. And so the list you run it against, I know there's an acronym Chief Hendricks used, OBO or something like that. Does that sound
No, that's okay, right to me. So right now we download two databases into the ALPR system. Yeah. One is all Oregon stolens. Right now there are 11,150 stolen vehicles in the state of Oregon in the database. Mm-hmm. So we download that every day into the car. And then we download our own Portland area stolens, which numbers between 60 and 80 that we download, and we download that every hour on the hour.
And I assume if there's an Amber Alert, something like that, you can load that in there and all that.
So when a crime occurs during the day, our operators are trained to put, if there's a plate associated with it, like an Amber Alert, they are trained to put that Amber Alert vehicle in the license plate reader itself, and it stays in there for the duration and shift. Then at the next shift, when another officer takes over the car, they put it back in. So we only put in a few plates a day that way.
Okay, so I just wanted to, because Chief, you mentioned something about capturing the image of the driver. I guess I was led to believe this only captures license plates.
License plates.
Okay.
It may allow us.
You made some
us,
reference to somehow seeing who was in the car, and I guess that's.
No, was, it would okay. allow us to maybe hold someone accountable who's stealing a car. We were able to put an investigation together that led to a suspect, but the picture that's captured is only of the license plate.
And then again, misuse of this policy by someone in the Bureau is something that's subject to discipline for
absolutely
of the nature of violating Collette's policy.
And as written in our policy, and we actually, in our policy reference, this database is to be used similar to DMV records and LEDS records.
Okay, thanks.
Can I just ask Commissioner Saltzman, because I'm just intrigued listening to your questions. You've focused on whether there'd be a misuse or an abuse of this policy and how the chief would hold people accountable. Do you have a larger context for that concern where there's some other use of data or other surveillance technique where you believe that the Bureau has not been appropriate in developing policies or holding people accountable?
Well, I think, you know, when we dealt with the cameras in Old Town, I think the Bureau did develop some policies at our request about concerns about potential misuse of the images or where the cameras were oriented. So that was the context in which I'm asking these questions. But I guess I was also concerned that, you know, the same way that you could misdirect the cameras in Old Town maybe to somebody's apartment window, that you could also, an officer who suspects his wife or husband is having an affair could ask somebody with an advanced license plate reader, could you, you know, print out where this license plate has been in the last week or something? Well, so that would be a serious abuse that I'd be concerned about.
I appreciate the concern we would all have for the abuse of any policy, but I would hate there to be a lingering impression from your questions that we have a lack of confidence in the chief's ability to manage his workforce on something like this.
I'm not implying that, but I just, we need good policies. I know, we often get dinged very badly when we don't have things written in policies and procedures.
I concur.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get dinged very badly.
Anybody else discussion with this panel before we move to public testimony? Thank you all very much. Appreciate
Thank you.
Your work. Sue, how many people have signed up?
We have one, Becky okay. Strauss.
Great. Welcome back.
Morning. Becky Strauss here representing the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and thank you for the great discussion, and thank you to the chief and the officers who were here explaining a bit more about the details of the use of the license plate readers and some of the existing policies. I really appreciate that discussion. As we've talked about, these camera systems, ALPRs, from our perspective, raise a myriad of questions about the use, the current use, the future use with the SUV, and the privacy implications of the use of this tool.
in Portland. So we've talked about the cameras as their function. They snap a photograph of every license plate that comes by when they're on, capturing information on up to thousands of cars per minute. The number I've seen is 1,800 cars per minute is kind of the max of the functionality at this point. The system